It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Your independence, I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU default studios of Phoenix with an S, PhoenixPhoenix.com. All right. Today is, Libertarian Day. We had Jeff Deist on the live show this morning. Then we did the Trump Report with Dr. Frank Tamburi, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. And we have this afternoon after Scott Horton, Michael Heise, H-E-I-S-E. I'm not sure how he says it. He's the founder and chair of the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus, and the Libertarian Party is going to feature prominently here. And the reason I wanted to talk to Scott Horton was because I saw that he did a show on Bolivia, and he had Daniel McAdams on. Well, Daniel's scheduled for this Friday. We're going to go ahead and do that. And I'm wanting to make sure that we get on what's going on in Latin America and so on. And there's so much, and I knew that Scott would know what was up. And I'm going, Scott, but then, you know, he definitely wants to talk about him some Jacob Hornberger from Future Freedom Foundation running for a presidente, which is definitely what we were talking about with Jeff Deist, president of the Mises Institute, and with Michael Heise in just a little bit here, and he's going to have something to say about it. Well, Scott was the first one that, you know, had, you know, I kind of had an inkling back in May when I talked to Bumper one time, Jacob Hornberger, we know him as Bumper. I don't know why. He told me one time decades ago, but that's how his nickname. But Jacob Hornberger was on the show last May, I think it was, and he had been to a lot of libertarian conventions and so on. I go, sounds to me like you're running for El Presidente. And he goes, it wouldn't be prudent at this juncture to do at this juncture of this juncture. And I'm going, well, that means that you're probably running. So we'll go ahead and see what we can do. And I talked to Scott about it, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm all over that. So he's behind that, been a pushing for a long time. So Scott Horton, let's introduce him real quick. He's the director of the Libertarian Institute. Yay, we got an institute. Editorial director of antiwar.com, host of Antiwar Radio out of Los Angeles, and he has the podcast, The Scott Horton Show. Now, he's the author of the 2017 book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. And he's editor of the 2019 book, The Great Ron Paul, The Scott Horton Show Interviews from 04 to 19. Well, that'd be interesting. That's interesting. Now, he's won a bunch of awards. He's appeared in everywhere, and he's written articles on, and kind of, he's an influencer in the space. Now, that background, Scott, all right, pimp yourself and or Jacob Hornberger, go.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here. I'm really happy to be here. And by the way, do I sound a little bit better now?
Yes, you do. What did
you
do? You
know what happened was, yeah, Skype had changed my input settings, so you were hearing the terrible mic on my webcam. But now I'm in my real microphone, so I should be okay.
Oh, thank you. God, I was wondering, what the heck has been going on, man?
I could see the sweat beating on your forehead there, and I felt really bad for putting you through that.
So you think it was I was on crack or something. I'm going, no, I am not.
Yeah, no. I was stressing you out. It was my fault. Okay, but I corrected it during your intro. I realized that must be the problem, and I got it corrected here.
Okay, I'm used to doing Zoom. How do I get the... there you are. Okay, boom.
Here I are.
All right.
Yeah. So, Zoom's been giving me different problems. That's why we're on this. Anyway, so thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, don't forget this setting. This has been a thing of mine for years. You know, so make sure whatever it is, I'm going to be saying it's your setting. Okay, so go ahead. And first, I want to hear about the Libertarian Institute. It's going to feature prominently as we go into the 2020 cycle. And I remember Will Grigg started that with you, and then we lost Will Grigg. That was a shame, you know. But go ahead and tell us about Libertarian Institute, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, I mean, honestly, I created the thing to try to give Will Grigg a job. I had the same problem as him, always raising donations and this kind of thing. And it just seemed kind of unseemly, and it seemed like it would be a lot more seemly if we could wrap an institute around it and say, listen, you know, it is a job. Will Grigg was our most, I'm the worst. He was the most eloquent writer and spokesman.
Eloquent is the word.
In our movement, he was the very best of us, and he deserved to make $200,000 a year up there for the effort that he was putting in, not to be labor theory of value, but in terms of, you know, subjective value. Theory of value. He deserved to make a good living, and he was not. And I really created it to try to build up a thing, you know, an institution where he was, you know, institutionally homeless, to kind of create a shell for that, and I could use a little bit of funds myself. And at that time, Sheldon had left the Future Freedom Foundation, and me and Sheldon have been great friends. Sheldon Richman, of course, the great libertarian, and we've been friends for a very long time. And I thought, well, of course, Sheldon is the perfect third guy for this, right? You have the former Bircher, you have the so-called left libertarian, although not that he's left-leaning, he just thinks libertarianism is of the left, which is a different argument. But anyway, so his reputation as some kind of left thing. And then me, the foreign policy guy, at the expense of everything else. And so the three of us together was really perfect. And then you're right, it is. It's just an absolute tragedy. He died only about,
well,
what,
Will
six,
Grigg
8 months
was
later.
Well, Will Grigg was known to most people as he wrote for John Birch Society's thing. What was their...
Right, he was the editor of the New American magazine for
many
years.
And he just didn't toe the line enough. I mean, you know, he went
That's
after,
right.
And he definitely did not like him, corrupt cops and law enforcement and so on. And, you know, yeah, you know, some people didn't like that none too much. So, of course, we're just looking for truth, and it's great that Scott, you know, did that for him. We have him speak at the Freedom Summit, and when he traveled, he had to watch all his kids. He had a gazillion kids, you know, so we hook him up with a couple of rooms and have, you know, so a lot of people bent over backwards to help Will. The only request I made of him one time, I go, you know, I give you a regular column, and of course we print, you know, put up on Freedom's Phoenix everything you write, but can you give me a happy face article and an optimistic future kind of thing? And he goes, no.
Yeah.
That was not where he dwelled, you know?
Which, by the way, so you probably see behind me, let me see the square here. Where is it? Right there. Okay, next to the Ron Paul book is the white one. Next to that is, that's Will Grigg's book. It's called No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. And we published that this year. It was edited by his friend and protege, Thomas Edlam. And it's just absolutely fantastic. It's so good. And I'm so proud that we were able to put that out. And I'll let you know, too, that next year we're going to be putting out another posthumous book of Will Grigg's writings. And it's going to be called The Stolen Life of Christopher Tapp. And it's a series that Will had done about this poor guy who was falsely convicted of this horrible murder in Idaho and spent 25 years in the pen. And Will Grigg knew all along he didn't do it. And so did everybody else, including the cops and the prosecutors who kept him in anyway. And the guy was just getting vindicated when Will died. His last article was about the criminals here, the cops, then the judges and everyone. They knew the reason it had all come to the head. It's because it was inescapable that he was innocent. And so they said, fine, we'll let you out of prison, but you have to plead guilty and accept that you did it. And that's the only way we'll let you out. So this Will's last article is just crucifying these cops and prosecutors and judges for putting this guy through this. And then after Will died, it came out that the number one witness against him, the lady said the cops extorted her. They threatened to steal her baby away if she did not falsely testify against this guy.
Why do they go after him so much? Why?
Well, they're cops. Man, they're closing a case. They don't care about who killed the lady.
You give me a banner ad, I'll pimp it. You know, give
me. Anyway,
give,
I'm telling you, it's going to be great. It's and it's Will Greer. He was our best writer. He was he could outwrite Justin Raimondo with his eyes closed. And Justin
was
a real talent.
He was eloquent in his turn of phrase, and it's kind of Shakespearean in his ability to paint a picture and an emotional build up to. But the build up was always government bad.
Yeah, no,
and certainly
he was
law
so
enforcement.
Good, man.
He really went after that.
Yeah, there's just no way to overstate Will Griggs' greatness. I mean, he really absolutely was the very best one of us. And the fact that he's dead still just pisses me off. I can't stand it. But
well,
anyway,
I'm glad you got that stuff up. You know, if you give me something to promote it, I'd put it on the site. Just make me look good. I got Will Griggs stuff.
There you go. Well, I'll definitely get you a banner ad for No Quarter.
Boom, done.
And you'll love No Quarter, man. I mean, it is just devastating. It is such a wonderful book.
Well, is it a compilation of his other articles or...
That's right. It's 2001 through 13, so it's not all police state stuff, bad convictions and police raids, although there is some of that. But there's all kinds of stuff on war and peace and everything under the sun, man. It's so good. It's perfect. It's the first two decades of the 21st century as told by William Norman Greig. That's what it is. Mm. And it's beautiful. You'll hate cops so much by the end of that thing, and you'll be out of your mind.
That was definitely – he'd get it, which is – Yeah, no, it's guys like that, you know, like, Mencken and him and some others that are just, you know, the rhetoric is so strong. And it's that brings us, let's do, we'll talk about anti-war in your radio and stuff in a little bit. But this segues well into what Jacob Hornberger has been doing over at the Future Freedom Foundation.
Right.
A lot of people don't know who he is, but you're going to. He is a, rock solid, explain it, libertarian, whatever the issue is. He's going to give you a libertarian answer. I guarantee you that. At least you'll understand the consistency and what answer he'll give on whatever the next question is. This is the power of Ron Paul. He was always consistent. Doesn't mean you always agreed with him, but he was consistent. And that is where Jacob comes in. Now, the Future Freedom Foundation was a, it's still around. It's fff.org. And they had a Freedom Daily. It was like a little book. You put it in your back pocket and you go around and it had, like an article you could read a day and kind of every month it'd come out. And it was a monthly. And was there a weekly version too?
It was called Freedom Daily, but it was monthly.
Yeah, it was a monthly that had, like days in it. But what happened was this was the first libertarian piece of literature that I saw that was I could see on libertarian friends, coffee tables.
I've heard people
that was
say
handed.
That.
Yeah, it was.
You're
this
not
was
the only
it.
One.
No, this was it. Mm-hmm. This is how a lot of people got introduced. After I'll tell you when it happened is when George Daddy Bush, when he did Read My Lips, No New Taxes and World Order and all that kind of crap, that people, when he did that and he raised taxes and New World Order, and there was a bunch of Republicans went, whoa, we going libertarian. Where did they learn? They read Atlas Shrugged and Future of Freedom Foundation's Freedom Daily. So that was how I was exposed to guys like James Bovard, and we became friends, and a lot of the other guys, and a lot of people here in Arizona supported Bumper. Now, Jacob Hornberger, Bumper, I just call him Bumpers, get over it.
But call him Jacob. He's running for president of the United States
Jacob,
of America.
It just flowed. I mean, that's 30 years of me. Anyway, so Jacob Hornberger had a Future of Freedom Foundation event at the Hyatt Regency downtown here in Phoenix. And anybody that went there, it was very memorable. James Bovard had just written, I think Lost Rights was about that time. Mm-hmm. And of course, Jacob, it was just the beginning for me of an understanding that there's an intellectual core with this whole thing. And for Jacob to run for Presidente of the United States of America means you're going to have a libertarian, well-thought-out, consistent decades of something that is going to, whether you like his answer or not, it's going to be rooted in libertarian principle. Now, you could say take the same principle, maybe have a different opinion. You could do that on things like abortion or, when does the right of the child over do kind of, does it ever, and you have how many libertarians can dance on the head of a pen kind of thing. But he will always use libertarian principle, and you'll get educated regardless of whether you agree or not. So I'm very excited about this as much as I was about Ron Paul, because this is another love-illusionary kind of candidate. Fill it all in,
Listen,
Scott.
This is... Look, the reason I'm here today is to convince you of what you just told me. So all I can say is just how thrilled I am to hear that you're excited about this as I am, and for exactly the right reason as I am. But let me elaborate on some more points, okay? Because here's the thing about Hornberger. He's running in a race of, and I'm not familiar with all of them. I know Kokesh, and I love Kokesh. And I don't know the others, but I'm sure they're great.
I've interviewed a lot of them. They're all pretty good. They're doing it for right reasons.
Yeah, my impression is that all of them are running as principled libertarian ideological candidates. And I'm sure they're all just as good. Not that everybody agrees on every single little thing, but in terms of libertarian principle, I give them all the benefit of the doubt that they're just as solid as he is, really. To me, what's most important here is his character, that he has that perfectly square character the same Ron Paul, in the same way that Ron Paul did, right? Mixed with these radical politics in a way that seems ironic and intriguing and interesting to people. And it's not just that. So he's good on his kind of image as a square. He's good on the radical libertarian principle to the nth degree, as you say, on every single issue under the sun. He's a master of the principle. But not only that, he's been writing an article essentially every day for 30 years. And he really is, not that he's the world's greatest expert on any one issue, but he is a great generalist on essentially every single issue. So he's writing about what's going on in the news, current events, the different wars, the different policies, the different consequences of the things that happen as they happen. He's got his thumb on the pulse of it. So he's libertarian principle to the nth degree, but he's not, insular in any way. Not that I'm accusing the other guys of being that either, but I'm just saying I think Hornberger has a real, wise understanding of what's going on around here. He's not the kind of guy, there are a lot of things where whether you're a libertarian or not doesn't necessarily determine how you're going to understand the news. You know what I mean? But Hornberger, he always gets it right. So like if there's a fight between the Muslim Brotherhood and the secular dictatorship in Egypt, he understands it correctly. Not that he's pure like Hortonian on every little detail of all this stuff, but he doesn't get it wrong. He doesn't get it confused.
He knows where Aleppo is.
Say to him, yeah, you don't ever have to say, no, we're not for vouchers. Or like, he's never going to leave you frustrated getting either libertarian principle wrong or getting, his understanding of the facts of the current events and the policies and the controversies surrounding them. He's great on all of that stuff. And he is and he's going to be getting better. But he's already, I think, the guy in the very best position to take what you said, that real libertarian answer.
Well, that's it's going to get him in trouble, too. There's going to be a lot
Wait, let me finish now. Because the thing is, the point is to get it across to the most people possible. This is a little bit contrary to his mission. I mean, at FFF, he's essentially like, this is libertarianism, like it or not, hope you like it. But I think with this campaign, we got to be broader than that. We have to be more creative than that. The idea is what we want to do is we want Hornberger running to be the president of all 330 million Americans, to appeal to the right and the left, not by pandering to them in any Rand Paulian way, but to appeal to them all by being such a great damn libertarian that his answers answered their concerns and questions, that the libertarian answer is the answer that the American left, broadly speaking, and the American right, broadly speaking, should be able to agree on. The libertarian answer, it doesn't say you're both wrong. It can, obviously, but it can just as easily say you're both right, actually. And here's how we're going to fix it in a way that can appeal to both instead of turning everybody else away. And I really believe, obviously, Ron Paul is absolutely the platinum standard. And so the idea is, can we make a Ron Paul revolution out of the Jacob Hornberger campaign? And the answer is, yes, we can. And the answer is that, is he up to it? Yes, he is. We won't have to worry. Just like with Ron, remember in 07, 08, eventually you stop turning up the volume on CNN because he's killing it. It's just fine. All you need to know is he's on and you're like, yeah, because you just know that There's nothing to doubt.
We got our 1 minute and 48 second clip of Ron, and he kicked ass, and that was the only time they let him talk at one time. Healthcare. Dude, he's a doctor. You know, we're just the irony of this whole thing is going to be obvious with Jacob, too. So this is, all right, let me give you my response to your rant.
Okay.
If I have to babysit a candidate or worry about what they're going to say, it's the wrong one. I'm like, I want to put my head down and plow. I just want to be able to do my thing, and yeah, whatever. He'll explain it, and time will tell, and I don't care. Right. And I've had that experience with two main candidates. One was Judge Buttrick. He's a retired federal judge that ran for governor here in Arizona as a Libertarian in 94. You know, it was the same year I ran. I was county chairman, Libertarian Party. I ran for Secretary of State. There was like 29 candidates we had. We just kicked butt. That was, whoa, and we're here. Well, that was due to the fact that top of the ticket, John Buttrick was a butt-whipping, summa cum laude, Harvard law grab, whatever. Now he's a retired federal judge. Now he's going to get involved, and he's a big supporter of Jacob Hornberger. I know that they talked recently, and he's going to do what he can to help. Now the thing is that him and Ron Paul, because of John Buttrick, I knew what a principled campaign was going to do. I knew what was going to happen. A lot of people, they you know, how did you know? I'm like, one, how did you not know? But I could see what was people were hungry for, and it took off. Well, is this going to happen with Jacob? It can. And it usually is every, you know, two or three presidential election cycles, you have this revolution keep coming around thing. Well, he's running as a Libertarian. Is that good or bad? Don't know, don't care. My thing is I don't want to be distracted by all the ouch quit it that goes with, because that was a bunch of ouch quit it with Ron Paul, too. He wrote this newsletter. He didn't write this newsletter. He said this thing. He didn't say this thing. He did. I mean, ouch quit it, ouch quit it. You're really a Libertarian, yeah, and you're really a communist. So, I mean, you know, this whole thing, don't care. My focus is take a look. Now, Jacob has been writing a new article like every day for God, months. I mean, it's just been boom, 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 boom. Well, he's had this up. I mean, he's really going hardcore, and these are all Presidente issues. You want to know what I think? There it is. I got a webpage, and here we go. Wrote a song about it, like, here you go. All right? Well, there it is. So this is, so the groundwork and the foundation has been created and done for decades. And this is what Ron Paul brought to it. When anybody would go and look at Ron Paul's one-minute speeches or his little articles or add to the record of and all that kind of, boom, he's been saying this? What the hell? You got a whole bunch of that with Jacob and the Mises Institute, which means Ron Paul and friends, you know, Lou Rockwell, Jeff Deist, that was Ron Paul's chief of staff. You have Tom Woods and Bob Murphy and Stephen Kinsella and Scott Horton and, you know, myself. All these people are going, here we go. Now, you haven't heard us say this, you know, since, well, we didn't do it for Rand Paul. You know, even 12, I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, it became institutionalized by then. You know, and I'm just going, you know, but this is different. This is when, and this is what, be 10, 12 years later, you know, 10 years later, and I'm going, yep, it's right on time, too, and it's necessary.
And so, check it out, too, is look, it's November of 2019 right now. We're not having this conversation in 2021 in hindsight about what we wish we could have done. Right. Look at where we're at. We have the whole thing is right at our fingertips right now. We've got a year to turn the world upside down with this thing, and we really can do it. We can make such a powerful movement out of this.
Well, you know, the Libertarian Party and all the candidates, there are a lot of, you know, good candidates, you know, some good concepts and funky ideas. You got, you know, Vermin Supreme with his boot on his head. He's got a fun message. I mean, he's having a good time. It's all bringing attention to. I don't have a problem with it. Then you got the guy with the taxation is theft, you know, hat, and he's doing, they're bringing attention to it. Adam Kokesh, I'm going to oversee the bankruptcy of America and dissolve and whatever, which might be what winds up happening anyway. And then
no objection here.
Then you have, you know, a bunch of the other guys, but Jacob Hornberger, I tell you why I was so excited. I was worried, and a lot of people say, nah, Ernie, that's not gonna happen. I'm going, you know, I was and John McAfee's, you know, running again. So there'll be all kinds of attention. Now, what I was worried about is it kept hearing about Justin Amash, the Republican, supposed to be conservative, they gerrymander him out of whatever the heck, and he's going to run as an independent, you know, for his seat again, if I don't care. Now, the thing is that he has – you know, the Cocopus support. For me, the Koch brothers and that whole crowd of whatever that they're doing, it seems to me that their main focus is energy policy. And they'll use whatever, you know, kingmaking, how many votes I got in a bucket of the youth of whatever the heck, to support that and be kingmakers in Congress and what's going on there. I don't play that game. You know, I just, nope. I don't want to be considered chasing the ball all the time. It's like laser with a cat. I mean, you know, I'm like, no, I'm not playing that. What I'm looking for is a steadfast, hard, true freedom for everybody on everything all the time, down to the individual thing. Declaration of Independence. They have proper role of government, defense of individual rights. If it doesn't do that, it's time to alter or abolish. It's your right, your duty. Boom, I'm in. Jacob Hornberger understands this intellectually and practically. Now, this is the one disadvantage I think that Jacob has of all of them, other than, you know, being relatively unknown. We'll take care of that. This is my it's a big giant balance of scale to his advantage. The only disadvantage is how it's the word naive is not the word. It's just so good and trusting in his fellow man of something, and that equates to like the political parties and his opponents and everybody. I go, no, they're bad guys, man. Don't be thinking that they're going to treat you equally.
No, I don't think that that's a problem. I don't think that that's a problem. I mean, I think his attitude is absolute all due respect to his opponents inside the Libertarian Party. And when it comes to the Republicans and the Democrats, not the people, but the leaders with the power in the parties and in the government, that they absolutely are the enemy. I mean, my problem with him is that he's too polite. I kind of had a little go with him and to explain that, listen, it is not wrong to use the names Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama. And he's like, nah, I really don't like being personal. I just want to criticize the Republicans and the Democrats. And I'm like, well, but the problem is, look, we're not saying call George Bush stupid and call Bill Clinton a rapist, which he is, and which he is.
And you would.
But we're just saying you got to talk about the policies that they implemented. When you say the Democrats in the 1990s, if you don't say Bill Clinton, it sounds like you're covering for him or something. I'm confused. Just tell me. In the Clinton years, this is what they did. George W. Bush decided to do this. And that way, at least, so people can understand what you're talking about. Early 2000s, George Bush made a decision. Okay, we're on the same page. What happened then, right? And if you just say the Republicans, now you're leaving it to me to try to remember who was president, what year, and all this kind of thing. So in other words, he thought using Bush's name at all amounted to like a personal attack that was over the line, that he didn't want to engage in even using the names. And I convinced him that, no, you really need to. So I think your worry is misplaced. I think that if anything, well, his man, you may be right in the sense that he's so polite, but I think that's fine, because then what you do is, just like with Ron Paul, you leave all the stomach cutting to the truth. You don't ever come after anybody.
You know, I don't remember Ron slinging around names or attacking anybody. Didn't care.
No, yeah, exactly. But he, the way that he got his business done was, in a sense, it was like deadpan, right? It was like he tells you the truth in a way where you're like, oh man, devastating.
No, the revolutionaries took care of business. Yeah, he didn't have to say it, and I don't think Jacob really needs to. I understand what you're saying, but.
I'm just talking about when you're referring to the past. Like, he was really like afraid to say their names in any context, kind of. And I'm like, no, look.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just he was going to violate his own manners was all. That I don't mean afraid like something would happen to him, but he didn't want to. Here's the example. Was in 1996, Bill Clinton decided that he'd be real smart to start expanding NATO in Eastern Europe. Okay, that's not a political. That's not a personal attack. But if you talk about in the 90s, we started expanding NATO.
So what's the example of what he would say?
But if he would just like say, we started expanding NATO in the 90s, or they did, or the government did, without, and I'm saying if you invoke Clinton's name, then you tie it to people's memory and experience of that time. Bill Clinton in the 90s decided to start expanding NATO. Okay, I remember that. The 90s, Bill Clinton, the Simpsons, clear crystal
Pepsi. I know that's
Pepsi
important to you, and that's your opinion. But I kind of err on the other side, because the reason I have my longevity and I haven't like been dead or whatever is that I never go after. I mean, hell, I ran against John McCain. I mean, you know, we were slapping it around. But the point is that I would never admit, and they tried to get me to. It was an editorial board one time. They go, well, what do you think of, you know, John McCain? Fine, I go, okay, you want me to say John McCain's name? John, you the freaking man. You are the man. I can't believe how many wars we're in, the economy's doing that thing, and you don't even have to talk to anybody until they started early voting. Oh, my God, woohoo! I mean, you know, I don't care. It's, you know, people understand. I understand your position. I err on the other side because I don't think it matters. You want them to get some pain and own some of the crap that they did and have them painted with this. They're painted, man. I get it. I'm like, the philosophy, what's your solution? Yes, they're going to keep doing this. Yeah, there's some guys, but they're just insulation. They're, if it wasn't them, it was going to be name drop of somebody else. I don't care. I don't care because it's just
okay,
more.
This is a waste of time. Let's argue about something else instead.
Yep. Can we talk about I get to point? Have my opinion on my show.
I get to have
my opinion, Scott.
I was actually only trying to like ameliorate your concern that I think his problem, if anything, is the other way. So in other words, you shouldn't be too concerned from your point of view about him.
Point of view is that he would think that they're going to behave ethically. You know, like the anybody, you know, he's just such a good person that he assumes that they are going to, you know, reciprocate him being polite. They're not, you know.
Oh,
yeah, it's kind of like a Tulsi Gabbard.
Who are we talking about, libertarians or Democrats and Republicans and TV people?
Anybody in politics, every sociopath that, you know, puts on a shiny badge.
Well, sure, but I mean, in the Libertarian Party, I don't think that there, you know, that's a problem inside the party. I think outside the party,
inside the party is just as bad. It's a freaking party.
You think that he thinks that CNN would be fair to him, or that the Democrats would be fair to him? I mean, I don't know what you mean by that. He's not completely stupid, dude. He knows that he's trying to run against Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren,
and professional and clear in his answers that it would be reciprocated by other campaigns or candidates to treat him ethically. I get that feeling, and I'm just
listen.
All right, we're going to find out really quick.
We are going to be doing everything we can to provoke the Democrats into calling him a Russian agent. We're going to be doing everything we can to get the Democrats to believe that they can use him against Trump to split the Republican vote so that they'll promote him and then we'll shove that down their throat. Listen, we're going to be in a fight after he wins the nomination and he's running against Donald Trump and Elizabeth Clinton.
This fight is way before that. This fight is going to start way before that. You think they're going to wait until June?
I don't know what you're talking about. Who is going to come after him before he gets the nomination?
No, I didn't say coming after him. Our campaign for people even know who he is. If you think it's all of a sudden everybody's going to get all educated in 4th of July, you know, by that time.
I have no idea what you're talking about anymore. I'm just lost. I'm sorry. It's probably me. Right. I haven't had enough
to eat
today. I just don't understand.
Listen, strip your cortex, quit waiting to talk, and listen to what I got to say. In 07, which is the year before the election cycle, we had Ron Paul came out and said, you know, I think I'm going to think about running. Okay, all right, here we go. And it was off and running. We went through that summer. We went through the following, you know, that winter, and then, you know, boom, exploded. But that was Republicans. We had a lot of extra time, and he was the last man standing to be in when they went to the Republican National Conventions, and he pulled right before we got there and didn't give us a chance to show what was up. So what we're at now, we're at the stage when we were just now getting ready to go to New Hampshire in the 08 presidential election cycle in 07, 08. This is when it really started getting going. Now, I just came from 3 weeks in New England last month and went and did some kind of groundwork for whatever the heck we're thinking of doing in 2020. And I wasn't even confirmed that Jacob was going to do this until after that. So I'm going, all right. I'm glad I went and glad we talked about it. What shall we do? Well, it's 2020 election cycle. New Hampshire is not going to be there later. The primary is now. This is in January, okay? In February. Then Super
What does that have to do with anybody attacking him, Ernie?
I'm not talking
you
about
said they're
attacking
coming
him.
After
I'm
him.
Talking about him being recognized, and the second he's recognized for any
that's
one
not
of his mates, I'm gonna push the button. It's the second he has any kind of traction that he gets on some issue, do you think it's not going to be challenged? God forbid he gets some traction on it, on immigration, on anti-war, on Federal Reserve. There
by
is
who?
Going to,
by who?
We're going to find out. Let's find out.
Okay. I don't think that anyone is going to lay a hand on him until after he gets the nomination. I agree with you. We need to be doing everything we can to promote him to get him the nomination. I'm not arguing that. That's a totally separate point.
We need a gentleman's bet here.
The attacks, I mean, other libertarian candidates, I'm sure, are going to try to beat him, but I don't think that that's a problem. I think that if we focus on getting him the nomination, running him on his strengths, then what he'll have to worry about is attacks from the real power once he gets the nomination, but then we can use that to our advantage. We're going to exploit that. That's nothing to fear. That's all fun and games. If you're saying that there's going to be a major fight inside the LP to get him the nomination, well, I regret that, and I hope he doesn't play that game and fight. I hope he just runs on his strengths as best he can and not try to fight. Because again, if Justin Amash aside, everyone else who's running as the Libertarian nominee right now, they're all decent people. They're all people that he doesn't want to fight with. They're all people that I presume he wants, hopefully, eventually to support him if he can win the nomination. And so I don't think he wants to fight with them. And I don't think they probably want to fight with him. They might have to. But,
okay, that's mark the date. What is today? November 19th, 2019, Tuesday. Okay, this is what people can do. I think it'll be by, let's say, end of March. So say April 1st, April Fool's Day. Okay, April 1st. All right, let's go ahead and do that. I predict, and you can mark it on your email. Just go in to your email, and it'll have a calendar, and it'll remind you. It'll send me an email, or you get a notice that, do it right now. You guys are in there. Go in your email and put on the calendar, April 1st, check Scott Horton, Ernest Hancock predictions. Okay, so we can sit there and blather about it all we want, and it ain't going to make any difference. We can do hindsight when it's April 1st. This is what I'm looking for. I do not think that Bill Weld, of all people, Bill Weld ran as the VP for libertarians representing the council on whatever the hell and what they wanted to accomplish, hip locked with Gary Johnson, that he had to be there to be able to control this libertarian message. And days before the election, he vouches for Hillary Clinton on Rachel Maddow, MSNBC. Okay?
You lost me again.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about people that are writing in the predictions thing. Now, what happens is Bill Weld was there to make sure that it didn't spark and they get this Jesse Ventura all of a sudden, where the hell did this come from? Somebody got elected thing. And they sure as heck don't want another Levolution Ron Paul thing kicking off. I guarantee it. It's why you got all the deplatforming, demonetizing, and control on the internet. That is why. That is why. They didn't want this to happen again. It's why the Hong Kong police had to go after that university where all the internet traffic was. And those guys, the college students were in control of it. Hell no. We're rushing this. You are not in control of the internet hub there. It's all about communication. By the end of March, I predict that Jacob Hornberger will hit it, get some attention on some issue. They're going to want it to be whatever the heck issue that is. It's going to be the open border thing. It's going to be on the Federal Reserve. It's going to be anti-war, whatever it is. And here's going to come Bill Weld trying to make a name for himself, going, yeah, see, that he's not that kind of libertarian. He's not my kind of libertarian. I need libertarians and Republicans going to vote for me and anybody but Trump, blah, 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 blah. There will be attention to Jacob's campaign regardless of the nominee's fight for the nomination in the Libertarian Party. When that happens, it will happen because they have to try and stop any kind of a mushroom cloud that comes from the activists. You think they don't remember the Levolution? They were freaked out by that. It was out of their control, spontaneous and on the streets, and there wasn't anything they can do about it. So they shut down the internet thinking that they're going to control this thing, but they're not. So whatever taste they get of Jacob Hornberger, because I believe they do feel threatened by this rhetoric, and when they find a chance, they're going to do everything they can to and not him. Regardless, and paint all libertarian candidates that way, then they're going to trot out Bill Weld, and he's going to say this about that because I care. That is my prediction. April 1st, there will be an attack on Jacob Hornberger on one of the issues. Go, how did you know, Ernie? How did you not know? Of course they have to, because it's an infectious philosophy, and he articulates it well. That's my prediction. That is my opinion. April 1st, put it in there. We'll see. Let's talk about something else.
Well, look, if Bill Weld or Lincoln Chafee or anybody else, Justin Amash, gets into the race, you can pretend that the Illuminati made them do it to stop Hornberger if you want. But, of course, they're serving themselves. That doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And the reality is Bill Weld will not be able to stop Jacob Hornberger at all, because Jacob Hornberger has got the libertarian movement joining the Libertarian Party, and they don't have the slightest interest whatsoever in nominating Bill Weld. It's not going to be up to Nick Sarwark.
He's going to claim that libertarian badge of VP, and I get to say this about that, just like he did to vouch for Hillary
as a
libertarian nominee. So I'm going, we're going to find out April 1st.
Bill Weld doesn't have a thing to do with this. He's not a serious threat in any way.
April 1st.
He has no support inside the Libertarian movement. Whatever support he had inside the Libertarian Party
doesn't stop me from getting emails from him and letters and whatever all the time.
Well, somebody signed you up for an email list. I don't know what to tell you about that, Ernie. Listen, I mean, this is ridiculous. Here's the deal, okay? Back to Hornberger and what's good about Hornberger, all right? There's been a debate. Say, for example, take a member of the LP who thinks Bill Weld ain't so bad. Now, the point of view of a guy like that is that, and you hear this all the time. I should say first, my position is the following is a false dichotomy. It's a huge dichotomy that people believe in the LP, and it's totally just a wrong red herring of an argument, and I'm going to fix it, okay? But it goes like this. The pragmatic people say, yes, we should be running warmed over Republicans, liberal type rhino Republicans, like, say, Gary Johnson or Lincoln Chafee, in order to try to appeal to a broader number of people in society. After all, Americans aren't all radical libertarians. And if you show them radical libertarianism, they're just going to run away. So the pragmatic and smart thing to do is to run a guy who's kind of a warmed over Republican, and maybe that'll be great and win some votes. Now, of course, that never works. It never actually achieves what they say in bringing in new people, winning new converts to libertarianism. At most, it's a kind of marginal difference. However, I understand why they feel that way. Because if put yourself in the shoes of a pragmatist, if you look at a lot of the radicals, they're kind of stupid. And what counts to them as radicalism is the kind of thing that you complain about. Ouch, quit it. Angels on the head of a pin. Libertarian theory on questions that nobody's arguing and nobody cares about. But that's the wrong kind of radicalism. In fact, I'll give you an example. Nick Sarwark, in his debate with Dave Smith, he said, look, Michael Badnarik was such a radical that he didn't even have a driver's license. And that didn't make it with anyone. His campaign was a failure. And the thing is, and I like Michael Badnarik. I know Michael Badnarik, and he's a good man, okay? But Sarwark is right. That's completely stupid. Going around making a big deal about the driver's license when there are such important things going on. It makes it seem like, yeah, you care about yourself and looking at your own belly button all day, but you don't care about other people. You don't care about the country. You don't know or care about the wars, about the boom bust cycle, about the drug war, about the school to prison pipeline. Who invented that insanity? Like, there is an emergency going on, an authoritarian police state erected in the land of the free, and it must be fought. It must be stopped to save the Americans. And you want to talk about boo-hoo your driver's license? That is stupid radicalism. That's not good radicalism. Here's what's good radicalism. Good radicalism is Jacob Hornberger saying, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore, about the war that still rages in Mesopotamia, about the literal genocide being waged by America, Saudi, and UAE right now against the Yemenis, about the $23 trillion debt, about the threat of nuclear war with Russia over Baltic nations Americans could not name, over emergencies, over really important things that are happening to Americans. You have right-wingers who are willing to vote for Bernie Sanders because they cannot afford their people's health care. You're trying to provide for your family, and the fascist, not free market, the corporatist healthcare system has rigged costs so high that no fooling right-wingers are willing to vote for a socialist, because Medicare for All apparently is the only solution to these prices they cannot afford. That is a crisis. That is an emergency. And what we need is somebody like Hornberger, who is, as Murray Rothbard wrote in that great article, Do You Hate the State? He's a radical minarchist. He's not an anarchist. He's not arguing on, which he could be an anarchist and still have this point of view.
No, he's a constitutional guy.
He's a constitutionalist, but he's here because he loves liberty and he hates injustice. He hates it. And he's here to make it right. He's here to say that what they're doing is not okay. We support a military dictator doing a coup against an elected government in Bolivia, in Egypt, or wherever it is. That's not right, damn it. It's really bad to do that. It's not like, oh, when I disagree with this partisan politician's policy on Bolivia. Hey, man, it's wrong to do that. And that's the kind of guy that Hornberger is that he's a radical in a way that is anti this government and is and what it is doing. He's not. And as you said, he is pure on libertarian principle. But it's just he doesn't waste time arguing about demunicipalizing garbage service when there's a world empire afoot here.
Why are you bringing these issues up? I don't understand what you see. I'm not feeling that Scott Horton's going to be satisfied unless it's Scott Horton saying it.
No way. Well, I'm talking to him as much as I can. But look, here's what I love about Hornberger, man, is that I already agree with him about everything. I mean, I'm the one who called him and told him to do this a year ago.
But you want his style to be accusatory in whatever and not Hornberger.
Well, no, that's not necessarily it. It's taking on the broader issues that the American people are up against. If you read his essays, he doesn't just say, here's how I feel about immigration. He says, here's the horrible thing that happened in the news, and here's me explaining why libertarianism would solve that from happening.
See, I don't have a problem with Jacob Hornberger's presentation. He's spoken at the Freedom Summit at least twice. I've been to a couple of his presentations. Of course, I watch a lot of stuff, and I remember the issue was we have a writer on Freedom's Phoenix named Frosty Wooldridge, and he never saw a brown person he didn't want to ship off somewhere. And we were had the debate. It was it kind of came down to him and Jacob Hornberger on immigration. And I remember Jacob said one thing that always stuck in my head. He goes, isn't it interesting that it's always government that's complaining about more customers? You know, right. And I'm like, okay, that's a good way of putting it. Now, what Frosty was going on about, it's border. Yeah, I'd be happy as hell now because it's all about building the wall. Border to the point that you're going to have to check and everybody's got to have their state-issued ID. We're going to walk around with our ID. Aren't you proud, Merkin? You got to have your ID, you know, or put on your star of something on your sleeve or something. You know, I'm going, that's what we're looking at. Now, Jacob Hornberger does a fantastic discussion on this, but if it's I don't need it to be, you know, with vitriol and anger and kind of accusing and wagging fingers or anything. He kicks the living crap out of this by just being Jacob. I don't want to change Jacob.
I don't know what you mean, dude. I'm saying that I think he's great. I'm not saying that I want to run. I'm saying the reason I'm supporting him is because he already is a radical minarchist. He does, I don't care what you say, he does hate injustice. Read his articles. He is spitting mad that people are sitting in cages right now. I don't remember
Ron Paul. Look, the only time I ever saw Ron Paul get no is when they said, you know, so you want to have, Al-Qaeda or whatever run our constitution? And he goes, no, I want. And that was the only time when the Giuliani thing happened and they were trying to, you know, make fun of Ron on something. That was the only time in that entire thing that I saw him get a little, oh, I'm looking forward to a kinder, gentler kind of, but beat the living crap out of him with philosophy. Because what are you going to do? Out-Trump Trump? I mean, you know, I don't care. And then
you know what? For like the 10th time in this conversation, you lost me. I don't know how you're disagreeing with what I'm saying when all I'm saying is what Hornberger does is great. The way he says it works well. And I guess I think that he's mad about things that are wrong, and you think that he's not. But
no,
so
I don't think
what?
He has. I mean, to, I don't think he has to portray anger. I don't think he has to come out as, you know, like a not a reasonable presidential.
Have you ever met Jacob Hornberger? Everything
I think
out
he's
of his
very
mouth,
presidential.
Look, everything out of his mouth is that this is wrong. If you ask him about immigration, he goes, this is wrong. He doesn't just say, like, in theory. He says, look at what the border police are doing to people right now. Look at this guy and his kid drown in the river. Look at these kids separated from their parents. Look at the consequences for border walls being built on private property. Yeah. He doesn't only talk about philosophy. He talks about how our libertarian ethics are being clearly violated, obviously, by the way that government is behaving. And so that's why we need a libertarian answer, whether it's immigration or whatever it is we're talking about. The FFF has gone to make it a mission to go to black colleges all over the East Coast or eastern half of the country and doing special symposiums all about the war on drugs. That's not pandering to anyone. He is trying to move the needle on getting people from as many factions as possible in American life, people who are not libertarians, to listen to his libertarian take on why we must legalize not just pot, but yes, even cocaine and opiates too, because the libertarian answer really is the right answer. Why is he doing that? It's because he truly is upset that people, human men and women, are locked in cells because they violated a drug law, and he thinks that that is an outrage. Now, that doesn't mean that he talks like me or that I think he's supposed to be angry or vitriolic or as adamant as I am in my presentation. That's not what we're talking about. I'm saying to you that how he does it already kicks ass. That's why he's my guy. Because just like we agreed in the first place, he's good on principle. He writes every day, not just about principle, but about how principle applies to what's going on in the news. And he knows why his libertarian solution is the solution to the problems that are the biggest problems that all Americans are concerned about, whether it's immigration or whether it's the wars on drugs, or whether the high costs of healthcare and all of the socialist safety net shit driving up costs so we need them, break your leg and hand you some crutches and all that kind of stuff, and whatever the crisis is. He is really concerned about all the very same things that Americans are, and he knows how to explain to them that the libertarian solution is the solution, not just here's what libertarianism is, though the heavens fall, but here's what libertarian is, it'll hold the heavens up. Heavens will appreciate it. This is what works. This is Ron Paul's strength too. Liberty in principle, absolutely, but liberty works. That's part of the principle. If our principle meant we would have a country of 50 kings instead of 50 states, well, then that would be a pretty stupid principle, wouldn't it? Like communism. If communism means that you live in a totalitarian dictatorship, well, guess what? Your theory wasn't that good if this is what it is in practice, right? So the answer is libertarian principle leads to libertarian solutions for America's worst problems. I think he's absolutely the man for that. And that is radicalism. See, that's not, and you know what it is? It's pragmatic radicalism. It's pragmatic as the Libertarian Party. It is pragmatic to have a constitutionalist, minarchist, radical like Hornberger running for president.
Which has
on
been
these
a
issues.
Lot of us, our that, argument.
And that's the thing.
They it's haven't a, done that. Go, no, you need another, you know, ex-congressman, or you need another rich whatever. You need another something. No, we
another
don't.
Another gimmick.
You know, no,
right. We don't need a gimmick.
I don't need a
we
gimmick. Need, I need a right. Jacob Hornberger. See, right. I don't, the reason I'm supported, because yes, I do know Jacob for a long time. And that is what I'm supporting, is the Jacob Hornberger that I know. Not a politicized one, not one that's going to do some other something or a mission of whatever the heck is, you know, somebody tried to convince him. Jacob Hornberger, what I know him as over the last decades, is why I'm doing this. That's it. Not something I want to mold them into. Not something I want to change. Not something I want to get. No, this is it. So I'm hoping, you know, that's what we get because that's what I'm in for.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that's the whole point in the first place. But if you're saying that he shouldn't be political while he's running for president of the United States, then I think that you're crazy. I mean, Michael Badnarik in 2004 said almost literally, I already know everything in the world I need to know, and I'm not interested in anything else in the world, and I'm just going to talk about the Constitution, and everybody can go to hell. What you're telling me is we ought to have a little bit more sophisticated version of that same stupid-ass point of view. And I'm telling you, no.
I'll tell you exactly what I'm saying.
Ernie, the point is he's got the principle. He's got the arguments. He doesn't need to change anything like that at all. All I'm saying is his audience is the entire American public, not just you. And if he's going to try to get across to the American public and not just be reminded that Ernie is still his friend, then the point is he needs to, of course, he has to be political. He has to talk about what the politicians are doing. For example, he has to
attack the CIA. I want him to do exactly what he's been doing. That's what I want.
Well, look at what he wrote. Look at what he writes. Do you read his morning article every day? Because I do. And you know what he writes about? He writes about the issues. For example, he's been absolutely great on Russiagate. Now, that doesn't mean that he goes delving into every little bitty detail about it. But in the broad strokes, Hornberger, from the very beginning, knew, understood intuitively from the get-go, this is a CIA-created hoax. You don't have to like Trump to understand the CIA and the FBI secret police framed his campaign officials with this Russia story in order to try to limit Trump's power. If they couldn't remove him, at least to rein him in and limit him. Now, that's not a particularly libertarian take. That's just the correct take. Okay, and Hornberger understood that from the beginning. And Hornberger, who hates the CIA, who's constantly railing against the CIA, he has his priorities straight and his context straight. So when a new development like this happens, he's not confused for a minute. Now, I happen to think that's a great campaign issue for Jacob Hornberger to say what the CIA just tried to do to Donald Trump is absolutely outrageous. They ought to have their entire charter revoked for that alone. Never mind the torture, and never mind them missing the fall of the Berlin Wall, and never mind every other.
Name the issues that you want to make sure that he brings front and center. What is it that you're looking for?
Well, we're already in agreement on this. We are already in agreement. Issue number one is the wars, the world empire, and therefore the national security state. That is the number one enemy of the republic. He already thinks that, no question. And then two and three, I think his two is immigration. I would make that three, but still end the Fed because, and again, with the American public in mind, libertarian principle, Austrian school economics, but here is a truth that every single American could and should and needs to understand. The government central bank, it doesn't smooth out the boom and bust. It causes the boom and bust. That does so much to disrupt our society and hurt so many people. Every 10 or 12 years, the bottom falls out of the economy. And everybody on the lower half has to start all over again. It's horrible. And that's the kind of thing that people love that about Ron Paul. It wasn't just a slogan in the Fed. It was, hey, guys, we're about to have another crash. You know that? And you know why? It's because of the central bank messing with the money supply. And who would have thought? Ron didn't think that that would appeal to people. The kids chanted, end the Fed. And he was like, oh, my God. He didn't make up that slogan. The kids at Michigan State University started chanting that at them. And he was like, wow, you guys really are anti-central banking? And they were like, yeah, we are. So I think that is definitely a strong issue, too. You can interchange that. Immigration is another one that's really important to him. And it is to me, it's an atrocity what's going on down at the border right now. At the same time, people on the right have a legitimate grievance that they're forced to subsidize all this immigration and that their government keeps destroying countries in Latin America and kind of forcing people to flee the wreckage of Bush and Clinton and Obama's policies down there to flee into this country. And so our government should stop making immigration more, and it should also stop clamping down in an authoritarian way against it too, which costs all of us our liberty. I mean, you live in the constitution-free zone there in Arizona. That ain't funny. That's not nothing. That's huge. And but the thing is, to not just, to me, from my point of view, to not just say, look, libertarians are anti-government, and that means open borders, like it or lump it. The answer is, hey, actually, you know what? We're against subsidizing everything. And that does include the health, education, and welfare of new immigrants. And right-wingers or people who lean right and feel that way, they have the right to feel that way. And you know what? We don't think they should ever pay any taxes at all. And we sure as hell don't think they should be forced to subsidize things they disagree with. And so you don't have to move right and pander right to explain that a libertarian position is so good that it should be good enough for a liberal and a conservative to agree on. It's so good that it answers the questions that we all have. So in other words, like on the war on terrorism, well, we're anti-war because we're anti-taxes and wars cost tax money. Well, okay, but left begging still is, what about terrorism? People are really concerned about terrorism. So you answer that question for them. You explain why the terrorism is all Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton's fault in the first place, how Bush and Obama made it worse, and how now's the time to back off and stop the war on terrorism, which actually only makes matters worse. It's just an example. Heroin is another. You and I, of course, already know and already agree 100%. We got to legalize heroin. Well, we also know that sounds really, really radical to average Americans. So the point is,
not anymore.
The point is to acknowledge their legitimate concern that people are dropping dead of opiate overdoses, that it's breaking up families, it's causing real problems, and you acknowledge that that's true, and then you explain why legalizing it, even though it sounds kind of funny at first, is actually the best solution to that. Again, Hornberger's a total square. It's not like he's a counterculture guy up there saying everybody do more meth. He's not in favor of drug abuse any more than Ron Paul was. It's just he understands all the libertarian economics and principles and everything that lead him to understand that prohibition does not work, it cannot work, and the better way is to completely legalize not just possession, but the trade in these substances. That way, when you buy heroin, if you are addicted and you buy heroin, you buy it from Walgreens and you know it's not spiked with fentanyl, which is causing the overdose deaths. And it's time for Americans to stop pretending addiction is just a moral failing. These are our community members who are dying of this stuff, and it's the black market that's killing them. And so you see what I mean? I'm already just channeling Hornberger right now. He already knows all this, and he already speaks this way. He already is good at explaining libertarian principle, but how it applies to our current crisis. And we have so many crises, you know?
I see there is going to, and this is where you and I differ, I'm looking for his reasonable adult in the room, calm kind of. And that's why Ron Paul, I think, was so successful, is because he was an older guy. Why did all these young guys supporting a 70-something-year-old guy they never heard of from Texas? Where the hell did that come from? People did not understand. They couldn't. They're like,
it was his character.
What doesn't matter? I mean, you know, they're just, character matters. Oh my God, when did that happen? You know, so my thing is that there is going to be an issue. Whatever the issue is, it's going to be, I think it's going to be one of the top three that you're talking about, or something else. And they're going to want Jacob to go in and say, you know, yeah, well, did you really mean this? It was like Giuliani moment. He goes, well, I want Ron Paul to, you know, say he didn't mean that. Oh, yeah, I meant it. Let me tell you what I mean. I got a list of books for you to read. This one-time opportunity is going to happen. And if there are faint of heart or try to avoid some bruises or cuts, you'll defeat yourself. I don't think Jacob Hornberger will do that. He's going to come out and he's going, let me tell you what's up about. So I don't want him to change. That's why there's going to be that one time. It's going to be one freaking time. And then it's going to be, they wrote him off. Ha ha. We got him on this wedge issue and he never did. Or he's going to come back.
He'll be fine.
And I want him to do it the way Jacob Hornberger does it.
That's all I'm saying. I don't know why you keep arguing with me when I'm just agreeing with you. You keep telling me I'm wrong, but all I keep saying is exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
So what the hell are we fighting about? God damn it.
Well, you know, I'm just kidding.
Stop complaining about the war. Is that your problem? Or what the fuck are you even saying?
No, I'm getting the impression that, you know, Scott's so passionate about some certain issues, and he wants to make sure certain things gets emphasized and said. Jacob has been doing this a long time, and he's got a progression, but he's only going to get the one chance and be left with the impression in the audience, in the electorate. And it's going to be one time,
I say it's going to be before April.
That's what I say.
I understand what you're saying, but listen, he's been running the Future Freedom Foundation. Now he's running for president of the United States, not just for the Libertarian Party nomination, but for the president of the United States. If you're saying that there is no adjustment required whatsoever in talking to the absolute broadest American audience possible, as opposed to writing for the FFF, where he's talking with two people like you who essentially are already
I want him to do exactly what he's doing right now. That's what I want. That's why I'm here.
Well, you know what?
I'm here. Why else would I be here? I want to come here and make him do something else? I'm not going to waste my time trying to get somebody to change something. I'm supporting somebody for the way
change
they are
what?
To present it the way he does. That's why I'm involved in this.
Well, listen, I think that, again, Hornberger is already good on every single principle, on every single issue, on every single public policy position. I think to deny that anyone in the world short of William Norman Grigg could use a little bit of help with how they say things or approach some or another issues is just stupid and wrong. You're wrong. Of course, he absolutely
I don't think he's going to get that many chances.
He needs to understand where other people stand when he talks to them. He doesn't just need to say, this is libertarianism. He needs to say, this is libertarianism.
I never got the impression he was just talking to libertarians.
Don't know what it is.
I never thought he was just talking to libertarians. Future Freedom Foundation
doesn't
say.
You're saying that's all he should be doing. I'm saying
he should keep doing what he's doing. That's what I say.
Look, his audience is now 330 million Americans, none of whom are libertarians. So it's important that he understands what it is that they think are important issues so that he can explain why his answer is the answer to what they care about. The fact of the matter is he already has the answer, and his answer already is the answer to their concerns.
Dreams the answer, what's
all
the question?
All I'm saying is, hey, let's connect these things together and make them a little more clear. Instead of telling everyone they're wrong, we'll tell them all they're right and that they need to be even more right by moving to his position. That's all. Instead of telling the right wing of the country, oh, you have any sort of conservative position on the border, go away. Who needs you? Oh, you're a left winger and you have concerns about gun violence. You should just go die.
You know, I've been there in an audience, a split audience, where you had the most I need everybody checked and papers please guy with him, you know, and them having a debate in front of a Freedom Summit. And I'm going, you know, I know exactly what he's going to do. That's why I'm here. You know, I'm going, I know how he's going to make the argument, and you're going to have to think.
That's a great example. So when he's arguing with the right winger, does he argue that the right winger is absolutely wrong about the premise of every single one of his points? Or his argument is that we don't need a police state to solve the problems that the guy is pointing to. We could have libertarian solutions that negate the need for a police state.
In other words, I don't think he's ever done that.
I can't hear you. Listen, it's such a great issue, okay? Because the left, broadly speaking, is very concerned about the clampdown, while the right is very concerned about artificially high immigration rates, right? Where Hornberger has a perfect answer for both. Not that he has to change his answer, Ernie. Stop saying about all change this and that. All I'm saying is he already is more right wing than a right winger on stopping subsidizing anything, including the health, education, and welfare of new immigrants, right? He also is against the interventions in Latin America that cause people to flee their now horrible countries.
And he speaks Spanish fluently.
And come here, right? But the point is, this is not pandering to a right-winger to say that, listen, you should not be forced to subsidize that which you oppose. And we should not let the Bushes and Clintons of the world set South America on fire so that people have to feel like they need to flee here to survive.
Is there some experience you have that Jacob has not been aware of his audience?
While at the same time completely opposing the clampdown by the anti-immigration forces and what they're doing to limit the immigration that they're actually encouraging, right? It's like pro-tobacco programs and anti-tobacco programs at the same time. Well, how about instead of subsidizing immigration and fighting immigration, how about we stop doing both? How about we stop creating the crises that cause people to come here? We stop subsidizing their entry to the country that makes people who already live here upset, while at the same time we don't give in to this fear and create this national police force and this terrible violations of human rights of immigrants and refugees on our border. Okay. So in other words, Hornberger's already good. All I'm saying is talk to your audience and address their concerns instead of telling them, screw your concerns, you should already agree with me.
Was this an experience that you had with him in some event or thing? What, you know, I mean, I know there was a...
No. It's just all I'm saying. This is like the kind of the argument ad absurdum, essentially, in this debate with you about whether every word out of his mouth is already completely perfect or whether there's room to strategize about how to talk to the American people at large. This is not a contest against Adam Kokesh. This is a contest against Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren or Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden. And it's going to be an entirely huge ruckus for at least 6 months after the nomination and up until November. He won't have to drop out early the way Ron did in the Republican race. He'll be in the race all the way to the general election, and he'll be able to attack Trump from the right and attack Warren from the left and attack them both for being too much like each other and damn them with faint praise for at least not being as bad as the other one on this, the way this one's bad on that. And we can have so much fun. And if you're telling me, no, we don't need to think about stuff like that, how to say anything.
No,
well, that's just silly.
I'm be very clear. I am not going to worry about things like this. If I had to worry about that, I'd be a campaign manager and go out and do other stuff.
I'm not telling you to worry about it.
I'm not telling
you to worry about it. What are you talking about? I'm saying he needs to worry about it, not in a worry sense, but that he needs to be... Look, we're all moving forward into the unknown future together here. We could have a brand new coup in Latin America tomorrow, and he's going to have to be able to address that. Okay, now he's got principle, but he doesn't necessarily know what's happening in Argentina this month, does he? So we got to make sure that he's just able to address things in a way that people can hear him. That's all I'm saying, man.
I really liked the Levolution years because we could do exactly what Scott's doing. We could say whatever we wanted, whenever we wanted, to whomever we wanted. That's the whole point of a decentralized, spontaneous order movement like that. You know, it's just, you can do whatever, man. You got a social media account and peace out. I'm thinking those are going to start going away and it's going to go back to more street stuff. But, you know, for Jacob Hornberger, I have no hubris at all. No, nothing that I think that I'm going to tell him, and I never thought I would with Ron Paul. I never suggested he do anything. I'm not going to do it with Jacob. I never did it with John Buttrick. I never did it with that. As much as Ernie thinks he knows. I know. That's becoming obvious.
I wish I had with Ron, because you know what? Ron's campaign was run by a bunch of right-wing dimwits who ran campaign TV ads about Ron Paul hates Mexicans. Paul was in the Air Force.
I saw that.
And you know what? That's all whatever. It's small stuff looking back in the scheme of things. But however, I mean, that's a great example, right? Is that there were times
I thought it
where
was stupid as hell in New Hampshire for them to go on about the immigration thing. They hammered on it. I'm going, who freaking cares? Whatever. I'm not, you know, in the middle. I don't care. You know,
all I'm doing is agreeing with you. Right. So in other words, it would have not been bad at all if you had presumed to say to him and to them, this is a real strategic mistake here. This is not what's special about Ron, is that he's further to the right on the border.
No, I just went
Tom
up and put
Tancredo.
A couple hundred Ron Paul Levolution signs up. That's what I did. I went to the business community on every main street in every town in New Hampshire. And we had a packet for every small
Same
business
difference.
Owner. You know,
Same
we
difference.
Went on the street. I didn't bitch. I did. You know, I just did.
That's fine.
Did. you know?
Okay, fine. But you know what? If his campaign advertising people, if you had communicated with them, they might have said, oh, I get it. You're actually right. And we didn't understand. We thought you're supposed to run him to the right in the primary. But you're saying that there's a whole special other thing going
on
here. I got
Scott to do that for me.
Okay. Well, there you go. So that's all I'm saying. I mean, if you're trying to talk me out of helping.
No. You know, you can do whatever. That's just not my role. The reason I am here is not to change it. I am supportive of Jacob Hornberger for what he is and the way
no,
I have confidence
Listen,
that he's going to do it.
Stop goddamn saying that. Listen, you're pissing me off now, okay?
You're pissing me off. Listen. You keep saying he's got to say it different and who he's talking to. And I'm going, I want him to do exactly what he's been doing and what I have been used to for 30 years. That's what I want.
Said. You're implying that I'm telling him to change his principle and to move where he stands. That's not what I'm talking about at all.
All right.
I'm talking about, God damn it, Ernie, out of 330 million people,
and
how many of them are
we're both on the same side.
Okay, every time you interrupt me, it just dumps the volume completely. Listen, man, for God's sake, out of 330 million Americans, virtually none of them are libertarians, okay? We're starting from essentially zero here. The Ron Paul revolution was 8 years ago. Okay, and that was the second version, which was less than the first, I hate to admit. Okay? So we're up against a country full of people who don't understand libertarianism at all. Now, I didn't say a thing about how Hornberger needs to move around toward these people. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is I want to try to help with how the message is constructed so that people can hear it. For example, I mean, just to be perfectly clear here, it's just an example. By saying the position is open borders, right off the bat, that is essentially saying to everyone, 150 million Americans who lean right, go away. I don't like you and you don't like me and who needs you and I'm not trying to convince you. It's essentially saying that. That's what they hear. It's like saying the N-word in a room full of 20-year-olds.
So he should say what?
So instead, you explain, first of all, as many different sides of your understanding of the crisis. We have a severe crisis with the authoritarian crackdown on immigration at the border. Well, at the same time, the people who are concerned about immigration have real concerns that we have essentially artificially high levels of immigration. That's why they support the wall and the crackdown. But what we need is to stop subsidizing the problem, stop supporting the drug war.
And your time's up. They go to commercial and you're not allowed to finish.
Man. Whatever, fine. I suck. You're right, and I'm stupid.
No, I'm just saying that you're not going to
ask me about a Bolivia coup.
You're talking about explaining a position rather than saying
the Bolivia coup. Do I need to know about the Bolivia coup to explain to you, or I shouldn't bother? I should just say, in principle, we're against all coups, whether they happen or not. Was there a coup? I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you started off with that.
I mean, doesn't that sound stupid? To not address, look, this Indian might be a leftist and the pro-capitalist factions in Bolivia might think that they don't like him. But guess what? He keeps winning elections 60-40 and they claim that he stole the election, but they lie. Just like they do on every color-coded revolution, the minority who are backed by America refuse to accept the results of the vote. And instead, they come out and protest the vote and use that as a pretext, pressure from below to justify a military coup d'etat. We've seen it over and over and over again. They did one in Egypt in 2013. It's the exact same script as they're doing in Bolivia right now. And it's against the will of the people, if there's such a thing in any sense of a society. This guy has essentially supermajority support of the population of Bolivia, who mostly are poor Indians. And so, yes, the richer and whiter and ruling castes of Bolivia, including their military officers who are all in bed with the Americans, they don't approve. And the Americans, of course, are perfectly happy to support a coup d'etat and are perfectly happy to tell these people democracy, elections, forget that. Democracy means loyalty to Uncle Sam or else. And so you have a military tell a guy who just won re-election to leave town or they'll kill him. They burn his sister's house down. They arrested all his people and chased him off to Mexico. But that, you're supposed to believe that's not a coup. That's a revolution by the people of Venezuela. Yeah, the very richest and already most powerful of them all, other than the president who was popularly elected in a national election. So, you know, now, again, his economics are probably, you know, more destructive than theirs over the long term. But then again, their economics aren't free market at all. They're just a bunch of colonels and a bunch of, you know, connected businessmen. That doesn't mean they believe in capitalism at all. That just means, for all we know, and we should presume, that they just want their company to be on the dole. That they think socialism should be for the upper caste only and not for anyone else, just like in America, where welfare is supposed to only be for rich people and not for poor people. Well, you know what? I don't think I have a dog in that fight. If I have a dog in that fight at all, it would be probably to side with the poor. And if I really have a dog in that fight, it's that my government trained the military officers who overthrew this government, Ernie. They went to the School of the Americas. Big surprise, huh? And the guy who led the coup was the military liaison in Washington, D.C. for 2 or 3 years before this, where he clearly was presumably recruited as a CIA asset.
Okay, let me bring this back, you know, to, you know, you're bringing this stuff up, which is one of the things I wanted to make sure we talk about. But Tulsi Gabbard comes out and says these regime change wars and put it on the doorstep of Hillary, and she's part of this and kind of got to stop regime change, regime change, regime change. And I go after terrorism. She still wants to war on terror, wherever the hell that is.
That's
okay.
Right. That's right.
So I'm going, yeah, you know, so is she going to be against these coups? Is she going to be against, well, regime change, but they're terrorists? Or that guy, you know, where's the line in that? So I know, like, Jacob's going to come out and kind of, you know, the purpose of America is protect Americans and America, and we're done. But so on this, you know, I don't see Warren being the nominee. I just don't. You know, I'm seeing Tulsi's, they're trying to Ron Paul her, and whether you agree with her or not, it's not the point. It's that she is different. She is a strong woman. Finally, you got a woman that's not, you know, banshee, She-Ra crazy, you know, and actually can talk without, you know, freaking the shrill of, oh, make it stop. I mean, you know, just yeah, annoying. So, you know, Tulsi, there are a lot of, I saw in New Hampshire, a lot of the libertarian free stater voluntarists are there with Tulsi Gabbard signs in their yard. And I go, all right, hardcore Mr. Volunteers. Why? He goes, just to piss them off, you know, because I want, you know, Tulsi to be up there, and we got an anti-war. We have a, you know, Jacob anti-war, Donald Trump anti-war, kind of. I mean, you know, they're trying to get that
in
vote.
Theory.
I'm kind of, you know. So I'm going, all right. Well, on this terror, war on terror, we got to get the terrorists. What's Jacob going to say to that?
Well, he's absolutely against that. I mean, he's purely Ron Pauly on this. The terror war is all America's fault, and he knows that. Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan backed these guys. George Bush and Bill Clinton turned them against us. Clinton's still backing them the whole time while he's turning them against us. And then George Bush exploited their violence to make everything 100 times worse, and then Barack Obama quintupled down on that. And so now our terrorism problem is worse than it ever was. But at the root of it all is America's presence in the Middle East. But this is the middle part of North America. This is not the Middle East. We got no right to be the dominant force over there whatsoever. And if we would withdraw, and if we would stop supporting tyrannies and or revolutions one way or the other over there, then our terrorism problem would dry up. And in fact, at the time we intervened, Al-Qaeda was only 400, 500 guys in the world. They had no ability to overthrow any government in any future ever.
So they needed recruitment with us bombing them.
That's right. America came and changed all these regimes and created all these new battlefields. It's like on Back to the Future, too. It created a skew to a tangent where now we're off on this crazy timeline where everything is wrong and Biff Tannen's the president and everything is messed up. But the reality is it doesn't have to be this way at all. The reality is we can just call off the world empire. We can leave the Middle East to the Middle East. And we have every reason to believe, you actually understand who's who on the ground over there a little bit, you understand why there's every incentive in the world for everyone who's already in the Middle East to keep any group like Al-Qaeda or ISIS down and out. every single kingdom, every single group over there. The only people who back them ever are the Saudis under the umbrella of American policy, using them to agitate against the Shia or something like that. But if the Saudis didn't have us involved, they would have no reason to continue such a suicidal policy. And, you know, it's true that George Bush ruined a lot of things by invading Iraq, and with that whole war, the way he set the table when he left means there's going to be conflict over there from now on. There is no happy answer to the future of the Middle East, but there is the answer that the American people don't have to be the victims of terrorism. That is all blowback from our government's involvement and where they never should have belonged in the first place, and they're only making matters worse.
Well, Powell, when he comes out, he goes, if you break it, it's yours kind of thing. You got to fix it kind of deal. Can we just sorry, we broke it and we're out. We're done.
Yes, can leave. And I know that he doesn't fudge on that one bit, because the reality is, as I know he understands principle and pragmatism, there is no way for America to, quote, fix anything they've broken over there, to clean up anything, certainly not at a reasonable cost, but in fact, not even within the realm of reality at all. The only thing we can do is further distort the levels of power of different groups at the expense of other groups in a way that just sets the region up for further conflict going forward. The solutions all have to come essentially from the bottom up over there in order to have, you know, more natural amounts of power. Like in Afghanistan, we have small minorities.
Oh, yeah, real quick, talk about your book, Fool's Errand. You know, before you go on about Afghanistan, make sure people know why you're such a, you know everything about Afghanistan. So do that.
Book about it, and everybody seemed to like it, including Ron Paul and stuff. It's pretty good. And part of the story there is we are propping up factions in a way that gives them way more power and influence than they would otherwise have. So in other words, it's no different really than Alan Greenspan shoveling money into certain banks who are spending that money on mortgage debt in a housing bubble. Eventually, it's going to come down. And it's the same thing here. There has to be, eventually there will be. There's no stopping the eventuality of a correction in the inflated amount of power of the Tajiks, the Uzbeks, and the Hazaras right now in the face of the Pashtun plurality of the country. Now, you don't have to learn all those names.
I know. See, this is my point. You know,
but No, because the point is, it doesn't matter. Look, I'm not speaking for Hormer right now. You ask me a question, I'm answering it. Is that we're distorting the power of some groups. And so eventually there will be a correction, just like in the market. So the answer is we can't trust the army to create a soft landing any more than we can trust Bernanke and Yellen to create a soft landing. We just have to pull the Band-Aid off. We just have to get the hell out and allow the people of the Middle East to settle these, in Central Asia, to settle these problems without us. And there's every reason to believe, since everything our government does makes matters worse, there's every reason to believe that just stopping will actually provide the space for the local actors to solve the worst problems and come to compromises and power sharing solutions and things to create a lasting peace into the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm like, leave me aloneist and leave them alone and we're alone and come over here and we do trade and peace with everybody and do what we want. I'm
Hornberger agrees with all that too, by the way. There's no question that I agree with him about that. Never mind that I'm Mr. Anti-War or whatever. When I say me and him are in agreement, he was here first. He's been writing libertarian stuff since 1989. And I agree with essentially everything that I've ever read of his, which is, by the way, that's my job. I read Hornberger every single day, dude. I have read him every day for like 10, 12, 15 years or something.
Every day I go, I check it. Every day we put it up on Freedom's Phoenix. Every day.
Yeah.
And he's got something there every day, you know.
And so he's already good on everything.
Yeah. No, this is all presidential issues. You know, this is like, you want to know what I think about that? Wrote an article about it. Like the read it. Here you go. So this is, let's go ahead and before I let you go, I want to, you know, we got to get ready for Michael. One, the Mises Caucus, we're going to be talking to, how do you say his last name? H-E-I-S-E.
I'm almost certain it's Heiss. I'm like 99%.
Okay. Michael Heiss. So Michael Heiss, how old is he? I don't even know what he looks like.
I'm going to say he's like 33 or something like that.
He's a younger man. You know, he's not a kid, but he's not gray. Okay. So we're going to be talking about it. He's going to have some whatever heck he wants to do.
Don't like him, man.
Whatever he wants to do. And of course, I just offer you, I want to help because I'm going to do, that's why I don't want to be on some list of anything because then you're like, you know, you're on a list and then you can get off a list or you got to, you know, report that you're on a list or something. I'm like, nope. Do whatever I want. Now, the road to what, you know, I get from you is that there is going to be an opportunity for Jacob Hornberger after he's the nominee. You know, we got to worry about him being the nominee.
We got to get him the nomination. My idea is that he ought to be running a national campaign starting right now for the presidency, and then hopefully the nomination will be, the obvious choice will be to nominate him if he's already really doing a great job of truly.
Well, what would be a national campaign? That would mean he'd come to the attention of something.
Yeah, well, April 1st. I guess you know what? I really don't know a lot about Libertarian Party politics and structures and
you're not missing anything.
And stuff. You know, I guess my idea is that if you keep your eye on the ball and the target really is the general election and you run essentially, again, appealing to everyone as possible, as many people as possible, why the libertarian solution is the solution to the crises that most faced America. I think that by the time of the nomination, he'll just be a shoe-in, that this is the guy who's proven that he is really making strides in getting this message across to people, and then we should be all set for the general, and I agree with you that Warren is so weak, but you know what? So are all the rest of them. I don't know who fits in there, and I think
Bloomberg!
I'm sure that the DNC can stop Tulsi Gabbard. She doesn't have Donald Trump's level of superstardom, and they have shown with their super delegates and whatever, the Democratic Party is so rigged. But I don't know who they're going to rig it for, but it's going to be a real loser, and it's going to be and so Hornberger is going to be in such a great position to run off and against both of these other candidates. Even last time, in fact, part of the reason I'm so excited about this, Ernie, is because I don't know if you know, but I was like a very, very unofficial foreign policy advisor to Gary Johnson. I was just sending him emails and not getting much response, but I was trying to, you know, teach him some stuff. But I could see, you know me, I'm not just a foreign policy guy.
Let me tell you about Aleppo.
too late for that. But so still they were in the race all the way to November, right? Not just again, not like Ron stayed until the very, very end, but at some point he's got to get out after the convention kind of thing. But these two, they're in the race the whole time. So I looked at it in real time. Now in hindsight, 2020, especially of look at the opportunity that Johnson and Weld had to mock and ridicule and jerk the chains of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the summer of 2016. He could have been the Russian agent for 2 years.
No, that's what Bill Weld was there for, to prevent.
Well, that's right. I mean, but just a counterfactual, just for hypothetical kind of thing. It could have been great if Weld would just attack Trump on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and Johnson attack Hillary on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and then on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays they switch, but attack them using the exact same language and attacking them for the exact same thing, and you know what I mean, just being fun.
They couldn't. They were for ironic flat taxes, and they were for baking cakes, and they were for all this other unlibertarian crap.
No, but
I didn't care what they said.
Listen, those guys were the worst. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the opportunity that they did
and
not
take advantage
of.
And they blew it because they weren't libertarian like Jacob Hornberger is.
Right, exactly. And I'm saying, and this is again what I mean about the message and the broadest audience of all Americans possible, is that we have to be extremely creative in how we go about making him famous and getting him the kind of attention, exploiting the cynicism of the mass media in a way that works to our advantage. We can't just say, this is what we believe. We have to go after Trump and Warren and whoever. We have to play on all the ironies and attack the right from the right and the left from the left and give them backhanded compliments and all kinds of things to get that attention. attention and get people to understand and care. You know, attack Donald Trump for his socialist deficit spending and then attack Elizabeth Warren for her right-wing corporatism, right? And then switch again, right? You see what I mean?
No. That was the L. Neil Smith thing back in the 90s. Yeah. He goes, you call a Republican a socialist and a Democrat a fascist and it applies and they get pissed
right.
off, you know?
Exactly. Well, that's funny that L. Neil Smith said that, because that was actually my exact line in the year 2000 driving my cab when it was Bush versus Gore. I would tell everyone, Bush is a socialist, Al Gore is a fascist. And they would go, when? I'm confused. Don't you mean that the other way around? And I would go, well, no.
Let me explain it to you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great way to win people to libertarianism is attack the left from the left and the right from the right. No right winger responds well to being attacked from the left, and no left winger responds well to being attacked from the right. But as a good libertarian, we're better than both on the things that they're really good on. And so all we got to do is tell them they're right and ask for a little consistency. Don't, like, you know, push them away, but pull them toward
us. You know,
because
they're
already like one third good.
I had a lot better response and understood why and that we would when I was over at Air America with Charles Goyette.
Oh, uh-huh.
And Air America, the Democrats, they understood, you know, from a kind of an emotional about the feels and wanted to do the right thing. And mm-hmm. we just explained it to them, like you're talking about, the libertarianism of, you know, but of course we had 3 hours a day to do it, you know. So right. it worked out really well. To the point that, you know, supporters of John McCain bought the radio station for like three times what it was worth just to shut us up, him running in 08. I could see what was coming there. So there, but the Republicans, they're a little different. You know, there's a, you know, the government's a tool for them to do whatever the hell it is that they wanted, you know. But then, of course, you get high enough up on the pyramid, and it's the same people left, right, that controls both sides anyway. You know, it's just so bad. It takes a real confident inside here, not afraid of the libertarian philosophy, to explain it and make sure you understand it and you get edumacated so that you know what their position is going to be on the next issue, in the next issue, in the next issue, and it starts to become your rhetoric. You're the one that's out there saying this stuff. And all the successful left and right candidates, or Republicans and Democrats, you know, appeal to that in the general. In the primary, they're trying to get their base. They want to make sure they get the nomination. But if we run as, you know, already got the nomination, like you're saying, running for the presidency, you know, Jacob Hornberger is going to kick the living crap out of them, which is why I see that building and they're afraid it's going to happen again. And by April, they're going to pick one thing that they think is he's most vulnerable on, and it's probably going to be immigration or something like that. And they're going to go, yeah, but you said, and he's going, yep, I did.
He'll be fine.
Of course he will. That's why I'm here. You know,
I have total confidence in him to handle it. Just like I was saying about Ron, about at some point we were so excited that he was on CNN all the time. But at some point it got to the point where we really didn't need to stop everything and turn the volume up.
Didn't
because
care.
You just know he's killing it up there. And that's how I feel about Hornberger already. I already know he's going to be great, dude.
But you're talking about getting him the attention. And, you know, I'm sitting here smiling to myself. I'm like going, and that's what I do. And if I told you some of the stuff that I was going to do, you get mad at me and start yelling at me again. You go, I can't believe you're doing that. I can't believe
you.
I'm
sure it'll be great. Listen, I just had a conversation the other day with, I forget who, about maybe with Michael Heiss, about I got to get back on Ernie's show and make sure to recruit Ernie onto Team Hornberger here. And so you're way ahead of me. I don't need to worry. I'm glad to find out.
Yeah, no. I remember we had you on not too long ago, months ago, and you were all excited, wanted to tell me something. You're going, yeah, let me tell you who's running for president. I go, you mean Hornberger? No, dang it, because I know you've been on his butt for like, when did you start this campaign to get him to do this?
You know, I don't remember exactly, but I think it was about, let's see. I tried to convince Tom Woods on the cruise. That would have been October 17. And then I tried, I think, one more time in the spring of 17. I mean, sorry, the spring of 18. I called Tom Woods one more time and said, listen, I know you have obligations. If your answer is you won't do it, then let's fight. If your answer is you can't do it, then I'll shut up and leave you alone. And he said, nah, I can't do it, honestly. And I said, that's it. I'll leave you alone, man. I'm not going to sit here and bug you.
So let's go bug Jacob.
I hung up the phone and I called Hornberger. And I don't mind that, and I don't think that'll hurt Hornberger's feelings either, because everybody knows Tom Woods is a freaking phenomenon, dude, and he would absolutely, he's so great. But anyway, Hornberger is just one millionth of a notch next on the list. You know,
what's Woods' view on open border? Is he a border guy? What?
Tom?
Yeah.
You know what? I think he actually doesn't really talk about that too much, but I know that he told me that Hornberger's position on the borders is fine with him. I actually thought that that might be a bone of contention between them, and apparently not. Apparently Tom is like, oh yeah, no, I could totally support the Hornbergerian position on borders, no problem.
See, it doesn't matter to me what degree we would have. We certainly have that argument here, you know, with Dr. Frank Tamburi and I on Trump Report and all that kind of stuff. And my thing is that I am so much more afraid of what is necessary to, you know, enforce the border than I am about the border being open. You know, that is what scares me. To get that, you know, it's like Frosty Wooldridge, man, he was advocating in front, you know, and debating with Jacob Hornberger on this very, and this was like in 05, 06 before it was like a big issue. You know, they were building up to be an Minuteman and all that kind of stuff on the border and so on.
This was how Will Grigg got fired from the New American by the Birchers, because he refused to go along with the big 2006 era campaign against immigrants.
Yeah. I could see that that's why, as a talk show host, when I first started doing talk show in 03, it was, you know, everybody's afraid, oh, you don't talk about abortion. You don't talk about, you know, some controversial or open borders, or you don't talk about, you know, bring the troops home or something. There's all these, you know, or drugs or guns or whatever. There's some things you just don't talk about. Go, the hell you don't. Those are my favorite issues. Woohoo, bring it on. Let's do it. Because then you get down to the real basis, the real basic fundamental of what the proper role of government is and where they should get the hell out of your way. And this is, it's all about property rights. I tell you, before you, I got to tell you, this is my issue. Yeah, I got two issues that I'm here locally, I'm making a big deal out of. This is my issue. You want to get Scott Horton's got his issues or he's got his issues. All right, here they are. One, we just did the Vaccine Education Summit for the second time. We had Del Bigtree and Dr. Judy Mikovits and a whole bunch of slew of, they just kicked ass. I know this forced notions and potions into my flesh or that of my children kind of thing. Oh, hell freaking no. I don't even give a crap if it's safe or not. That's not the point. Are you going to force me into some notion and potion from the crown? Oh, bring it on. Okay, so that's a property right issue of I own myself, and sure as hell the crown doesn't own my kids. They want you to believe that the village does or some crap. Hell no. The other one is you got all these people occupying the sidewalk of I'm living on the streets and pick your city in California, and you know they can occupy that, but if they owned land, you can't occupy your own land without a permission slip from the crown. You know, I go, if it pleases the crown, may I occupy my own freaking land? No, you got to have a permission slip. And I go, where in the hell did that come from? So we're doing a lot of the research on this. I just went to the Red Pill Expo. A bunch of the guys there are looking on, kind of getting some answers. But I tell you, this whole concept, where did that come from? Of course,
what,
it's going to be
property taxes?
No. You, to live on your land, to even put up a tent, you know, the builders to do anything, you have to have a permission slip, an occupancy permit to do that. Now, how you get that occupancy permit, you know, there's building codes and this and sewer, and they got 15 gazillion things they're going to make you do to where a homeless guy ain't living, even if he had the land, he couldn't live on it, couldn't afford it, you know? So I'm just go, where did the concept come from that I have to get a permission slip from the crown to live on my own land? That's what I thought America was all about. You know, yeah. Property rights. So I got...
No, America's all about carving out exceptions to your rights.
Exactly. And I want to bring this point up. So we got art and everything, and I'm being a butthead about it. So it would be interesting to see what Jacob has to say about that. But I could, you know, in just a little bit of research, we're finding that, you know, one, it's they tell you all how they're going to do it and why you should, but they ain't telling you the history, where it came from. Where's the rhetoric? Where was the campaign for that?
I mean, I might be somewhat off base, but I think probably all this comes from the early 1900s and the progressive reforms, right, where you have to get a license to be a plumber and you have to have a license to be an architect and you have to fulfill within the certain guidelines. Yeah. And a lot of those things are certainly sensical on their face. You and I would prefer private guilds doing the enforcing and so forth, but there ought to be a building inspector to make sure your building's going to stay up.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that kind of got me
the hard way.
That interesting, somebody sent me, they go, yeah, I think I know where it is, and they, you know, sending me stuff. And a lot of it was certainly after World War II, and it really got going with the United Nations thing. So it's definitely a United Nations thing. But it started before that, and it was...
Wait, occupancy thing? What does that have to do with the UN? That doesn't sound right.
Building codes.
That just sounds like local zoning, state issues.
No, building codes. When you had the building permits for, you know, how you do a structure, it used to be northeastern from the Mississippi to the northeast, then the Mississippi to the southeast, and then the western. There was three regions, and they wanted to harmonize them. And where did they come up with that? The United Nations. They had, you know, this is how we're going to do it, you know. So it was all part of this Rosa Corey going on about sustainable development. It's how do you have sustainable development? Well, you got a code, you know, they got to have how you're going to do it. So this, and I'm going, okay, but before that, when did the occupancy permit thing, it looks like, you know, the most recent that I saw kind of beginnings of it was the reformation after the Civil War. It's when we became all 14th Amendment kind of America, U.S. citizens of the federal, whatever the hell, and they go, and we control the land. So I'm going, really? So, you know, we're still in the early stages of this, but it's a good question. Can I occupy my own land? Nope, not without the Crown's permission. Then you wonder why they're living on the sidewalk. I'm going, what the hell? So anyway, it's a good question. That's one thing that I'm going to be pushing on. And of
and
course,
you know what? It's
thing.
Another great... It's another great issue for Jacob Hornberger.
I don't know
about, you know, exactly on your particulars in terms of the history and all this, but just the fact that we have a massive homeless crisis, well, at the same that everyone is concerned about, left, right, and everyone else, and the obvious first steps are to stop all the government interventions that make it so difficult for people to live in houses, starting with the inflationary money and the constant, this racket of constantly funneling zillions of dollars of new government money into the housing industry in order to prop up the values of people's existing houses as essentially welfare for middle-class people, but that makes it impossible for poor people to own a home. Or to even be able to rent one for that matter, because you got to pay for the mortgage plus property taxes and the price of your rent too. And so no wonder you have so many homeless people. Look at all the different things that government does from, you know, on the first creating, you know, situation like that. But then on the other end, then blocking increased rents with rent control and other things that make it impossible to expand supply. Even though they're propping up the prices of what exists, they won't let you take advantage of those high prices by expanding supply. And so they're just short-circuiting the market coming and going.
Do you think it's on purpose?
And now you wonder why people live on the ground.
Do you think it's on purpose? Is there an intent, or are they
no,
just stupid?
No, I think they're so stupid. Listen, you know, I'll tell you a funny story, man.
We got to go because I get ready for Michael. Go ahead.
I'll be real quick. You're probably familiar with Gary North from the LouRockwell.com and so forth, right? And now he is known as a very curmudgeonly old gold bug Mises Institute guy.
Big education kind of guy and stuff.
And well, not only that, but he has probably the most sophisticated education in conspiracy theory history of anyone you've ever met in your life. And going back hundreds of years, I've seen his bibliographies that are just, man, are just a dream come true in terms of, not, and I don't mean conspiracy theory in a negative, demeaning way. I mean revisionist history of all types. I mean, he's really kind of comes from that John Bircher conspiracy sort of a background.
Yeah, kind of a John Taylor Gatto kind of thing.
Yeah, but he also is a real, you know, brilliant Misesian economist and businessman. And so he wrote about, you know, he's the kind of guy who would write about Skull and Bones and Freemasons and these sorts of things. And not that he assigns them a greater role than they deserve, but he's certainly not shy about topics like that. And after the crash of 08, a lot of conspiracy-minded people on the right were saying that it was all a put-up job. It was all essentially a giant scam, and they crashed the economy on purpose and this kind of thing. And Gary North goes, no, man, that really isn't where it's at. And the reality is these people just refuse to read Mises. The reality is they're smart. They think that they know how many QEs is the right number of QEs. They think that they can peg the interest rate. And the fact that Lehman Brothers no longer exists proves that the secret society, orders of power, and these kinds of things, they don't do this to themselves deliberately. They do this to themselves because they can't understand what a ninth grader who has read Mises does understand, which is by expanding the money supply and artificially holding the interest rate down, you create these massive distortions that necessitate these massive corrections.
And I think they don't care it does, and in the interim, they make a boatload of money.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, you don't think that they care that they lost Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers?
No, the guys that did it, they're doing fine. They're living on the island.
And Sachs likes it, but I'm pretty sure the guys at Lehman Brothers don't. And they weren't in on that. It was a deliberate thing to prop up all their own wealth as long as they could. The fact that the bottom fell out from them, essentially, as Gary North was saying, and I agree, was essentially as much a surprise to them as it was everybody else. Otherwise, they would have gotten out first. They didn't get out. They lost everything because essentially they're just as dumb as they seem.
Well, Goldman Sachs was selling short all their crap right at the end, you know, so they knew something. Hey, Scott Horton, give out all your websites and everything and make people go there and give you money and stuff. Go buy your book, Fool's Errand.
Okay, so there's my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. There's my other book, The Great Ron Paul, The Scott Horton Show Interviews from 2004 through 2019. And I'm the director of the Libertarian Institute. I'm the editorial director of antiwar.com. Oh, Libertarian Institute. We're starting a fund drive like this week or next week. So keep your eye on that, libertarianinstitute.org. I'm the editorial director of antiwar.com. I'm the host of Antiwar Radio on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA on Sunday mornings, if anybody here lives in Southern California there. And I don't know what else, man. Something. I'm writing a book right now about the terror war, and I'm an unofficial advisor to Jacob Hornberger for president.
But gosh darn it, he's going to be heard. Damn it.
At least you're going to hear me in his name, that's for sure.
All right, Scott Horton, the man. Yeah, we're still good friends. You know, it's just I'm excited too. But I'm going to do out here because I don't get in the middle. I don't care because I know what I'm going to do and why.
I'm excited about that. Thank you.
Peace, brother. Bye.
See ya.